I want to move on, and as you can tell from the first two talks, this is about us, about what we as pastors deal with, you know. And I want to, the third heart issue that I want to talk about is, you know, how do we run our, you know, what do we run our ministry on? What do we, how do we lead? Through the strength of, you know, just power or love? Okay? You know, as spiritual leaders, we've been given a trust, right? We've been given power, both power and position in people's lives. And that power and that position can be used wisely for the benefit of others, or selfishly to get our own way, or to protect ourselves. Mm-hmm. See? Now, how do we use our position and our power when we're let down by someone, or lied to, or hurt? You know, the question becomes this: what will my leadership run on? Power or love? And I'm reminded of another incident or segment of King David. We're going to go back to David again, because he, to me, is the most human of all our leaders that we have, that we look at. We get to see the good, the bad, and the ugly with David. I relate to David in a big way. Not because he, you know, he's as great as he, but just as human as he was. You know. Anyway, I'm reminded of Mephibosheth. You remember that guy? I can't even say his name. I'm going to be struggling with that for the next half hour here. Mephibosheth and David's generosity. There's a story there. We don't, and I find intriguing. You remember who he was? Mephibosheth. It starts to roll off your tongue the more you say it. He was the son of Jonathan. Remember? The grandson of King Saul. Remember his story? The news of Saul and Jonathan's death reaches the royal palace. Alright? And fearing the worst, everyone gets out of Dodge. They flee. All the servants, all the assistants, the whole part, you know, the whole administration, they get out of Dodge. Mephibosheth's nervous, because Mephibosheth is just a toddler, maybe, at the time, I think so. He grabs him, and, you know, he's on the run. And he trips and falls, and in the fall, the child's, both his ankles are broken. And it must have been severely, and think about in those days, they didn't have a lot of good emergency care and everything. And so, you know, whatever the injury was, it turns out bad for the kid. And, you know, breaks both his ankles, and he grows up handicapped. He can't get around on his own. He needs help, right? And so he grows up handicapped, in exile, in obscurity as a royal. But this is Saul's son, the next in line. I mean, Saul's grandson, Jonathan's, but he's in royal. He's a royal. Grows up handicapped, in exile, in obscurity, and a victim. He didn't do anything wrong. Yeah, you know, this is a tragedy, a victim. He had every right, you know, to be bitter and to blame David for his misery. It's all David's fault. I can, you know, It's all David's fault we're living in exile. It's all David's fault. If it wasn't for David distracting my father and making him crazy, you know, my father would have never got ambushed and killed by the Philistines. It's all David's fault. That my father is dead, that my grandfather's dead, that I'm living like this. Now, years later, now an adult, he's called back to Jerusalem. Is this bad news? Is this David taking care of unfinished business? Taking care of old enemies? You know? Was this a death sentence for Mephibosheth? Right? Now, what he didn't know was that David had begun his work as king with justice, fairness, and love. We read in 2 Samuel verse 15, it says, "So David reigned over Israel and did what was just and right for all the people." David was a different kind of king than his grandfather was. Mephibosheth was called back to Jerusalem not to be executed, but to be loved. David honors that unshakable covenant that existed between himself and Mephibosheth's father, Jonathan. See? Remember the covenant that they made? 1 Samuel 20:42. "At last Jonathan said to David, 'Go in peace, for we have sworn loyalty to each other in the Lord's name. The Lord is the witness of a bond between us and our children forever.'" This was a covenant of love without regard of changing circumstances, changing administrations, you know, changing emotions, regardless of convenience, it stood. It was steadfast love. It was faithful, of committed love, you know, sacrificial love. It's the love that God has for us. Mephibosheth, I think I said that right, but you know what I'm talking about. He's now a target of that love. And so he comes into the palace thinking he's going to get, you know, David could did some pretty brutal things. Right on the spot. You know, David was a professional murderer. He was a killer. He was a professional soldier. He could take care of business like without a blink of an eye. So think about what Mephibosheth is thinking about right here. And he goes into the palace, right? And this is what David says to him. "Off with his head!" No. He says, "Don't be afraid. I intend to show kindness to you because of my promise to your father. I will give you all the property that once belonged to your grandfather Saul. And you will eat here with me at the king's table." Yeah, wow, think about what's going on here. You know, this is a defining moment in David's life. He has to decide how he will exercise his power and his authority that he has been given. And it was ultimate. The question is this for him. What will determine how he leads? Love or power? Will he manipulate and manage so that he can get keep control? Or will he be open and generous so that he can love? And he answers that as he decides whether to execute Mephibosheth or honor him by keeping his covenant of love. See, from his place of security, David exercises his power by looking for ways to love this grandchild of Saul. And so we read this in it's 2 Samuel 9:1. One day David asked, "Is anyone in Saul's family still alive? Anyone whom I can show kindness for Jonathan's sake?" And so he decides to love, you know, that love would characterize his leadership. Not vengeance and not convenience. So from that day on, we read this. Mephibosheth ate at David's table like one of the king's sons. Now, we'll push the fast forward button to in the story as we go forward. David's son, Absalom, has rebelled. Mephibosheth is living as an honored guest in David's house, and he's a recipient of love. We're never told whether he reciprocated, by the way. We're never told whether he returns the love or if he still hung on to that victim mentality, that bitterness. We don't know. Okay. After all, think about it. There are no guarantees there's no guarantees that generosity and love will be rewarded with loyalty and gratitude, right?
Yeah.
But we just don't know. Love is a risky business. We can be taken advantage of. We can be betrayed. Did Mephibosheth return David's generosity with loyalty and betrayal? There are two stories that come up that support both possibilities. There's the story that's told by a guy named Ziba. And it's a story of an accusation of betrayal. Ziba is a former servant of Saul, put in charge of, caring for Mephibosheth. He's been his Man Friday, his valet. He's been his sidekick, helping him. Absalom has he's unseated his father from the throne. All right. There's a civil war. The odds are against David. David escapes in disgrace, and Ziba joins him. All right. And when David asks him where Mephibosheth is, he says that my master has deliberately stayed behind in hopes of becoming king. After all, he is royalty. So maybe Mephibosheth has these plans. Now's my chance. I can become king. David's in trouble. He's like, no, I'm staying behind. That's the story that Ziba's given David. Right? He's a traitor. Yeah. Ziba, pledges his loyalty to David. stranger. David asks no questions. He accepts the story face value. And he rewards Ziba. Then we come to the second version of the story, Mephibosheth's story of the same incident. Right? Following Absalom's defeat and death, David returns to Jerusalem. Right? Now he hears a different story. Mephibosheth tells him that he was ready to join David, but Ziba betrayed him, left him behind. He left him stranded. What was he, after all, the guy couldn't walk. They didn't have wheelchairs in those days. He had he had Ziba. Okay. His story seems believable. Who is telling the truth? We hold our breath. No cross-examination. You know, no calling in of witnesses. Is there anybody else that can back you up? Tell me. But he knows that both stories can't be true. But he accepts both men back into the city. Back into his household. Why? Is he an idiot? No. The conclusion I come to is David didn't care who was telling the truth. His love was large enough to handle faithfulness. Neither.
Say that again. His love was what?
Faithfulness or lies?
Large enough to handle.
Large faithfulness. Enough.
Large enough to handle lies. Well, yeah. Say that. Say just that. Say it again.
His love was large enough to handle faithfulness and lies. Because neither power nor betrayal could stop him from loving. Think about it. He had survived the worst rejection and betrayal of his life, his own son, Absalom. You know, he's grieving at this moment terribly for his son. You know, he's been abandoned by many, almost all his trusted friends. There's so much treachery. It really doesn't matter to David anymore. He doesn't really have to know who's telling the truth at this point. He treats Mephibosheth with the same love and Ziba with the same love that God had treated him. This is craziness. Well, what do we learn about David's leadership from these crazy stories? In the midst of everything, administrating a new government, dealing with divisive insubordinates, rebellious children, you know, facing danger on the run, you know, David determines to love no matter what. He dodges the temptation of power and the frailty of success, and managed to vulnerably love. Love others that could easily just turn on like that, at a drop of a dime. Can you think, where else have we seen leadership like this? Crazy, nutty, outrageous leadership like this. who encourages us to let love rather than power be the navigational means by which we guide our lives and our leadership? Where else? Listen to these words. After washing their feet, he put on his robe again and sat down and asked, "Do you understand what I'm doing? You call me teacher, Lord, and you're right, because that's what I am. And since I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you ought to wash each other's feet. I have given you an example to follow. So now I'm giving you a new commandment. Love each other just as I have loved you. You should love each other." Jesus introduced a whole new way of leading. A way shaped by sacrificial love rather than by power. Servant leadership. Whoever wants to be a leader among you must be your servant, and whoever wants to be first among you must be a slave of everyone else. For even the Son of Man came not to be served, but to save others and give his life a ransom for many. The story of David and Mephibosheth is an example of this type of leadership. Crazy. Scary. I don't know about you, it's scary for me. Cross-shaped leadership. Leadership that's molded and shaped by God's covenant love. That even when we were enemies, he chose to love us. You know, years ago, like Mephibosheth, I was on the receiving end of that type of leadership. I told you that I met John Wimber. I was working for Teen Challenge. I was pastoring a church that was under Teen Challenge umbrella, King's Chapel. It was a cool church, you know, and we were doing well. But my heart was captured by this new movement. I knew my new family. I knew we were moving on. And I was so excited, and I was so, you know, I was 1970, I was like about 32 years old. I was half the age I am now. Headstrong. God, I heard God. I'm experiencing this. I'm going forward with a bright future. And I got to leave this old family for my new family. And that leaving didn't go well. We were expelled by the tribe, so to speak. You know, we paid a big price. Oh, we were victims. I was brokenhearted. I cried on the phone that, "John, what am I going to," you know, I was like wanting to vomit. And it was just like, oh, you know, that feeling. And John, he says to me, "Mike, don't defend yourself. God will be your defender." So we shut up and we were the victims. We were, you know, living in exile. But the Holy Spirit didn't want to leave this the way it was. Me being, I was wrong. Little by little, over the next couple of years, whenever he could get a chance, whenever I wouldn't block him out on this thing, he showed me a glimpse of what really happened. What really happened was I broke Don Wilkerson's heart. He was like a dad to me. And the way I left, it wasn't the wrong decision to leave. God called us to the vineyard. I'm here today because you know, because of that. Through hell and high water, I'm still here because I've been called here. That wasn't the problem. The problem was the way I did it. In my zeal, I was blinded by youthful zeal. I broke my spiritual father's heart. I didn't even know. Little by little, the Holy Spirit starts giving me glimpses of this. And I'm starting to feel ashamed of myself. You know? Several years later, I couldn't take it anymore. I had to do something about it. I was feeling so bad about it, and so I wanted to make things right with Don. So I asked him, can I meet with you? And so we did. And when I asked for forgiveness, when I just humbled myself, I was, I'm so sorry for what I did. He acted surprised, as if nothing had ever happened. He didn't know what I was talking about. As if this incident had never happened. It was strange. I didn't know. Then I realized what went on after the meeting, because everything was beautiful. He welcomed me back. He was so happy. He's just asking questions about our family and our sons growing up because he was our dad. And it was like nothing had ever happened. Oh, and he was excited about the church. He was excited about the vineyard. He was excited for us. Genuinely. He wasn't putting on a bunch of baloney. What the heck? I pondered this after I left that meeting because it was settled. It was good. We were together. We are to this day. What? What the heck was that? I realized that this was Don's way of loving me. Choosing to be open and generous with me rather than make me pay and squirm in my shame. He chose to love me and let me sit at his table rather than make me pay. Give me the talk, which he had all the right in the world to do. His memory lapse restored and healed me. His love freed me to move on at the expense of his own injured heart. I am eternally grateful for that. That's the same type of Christ-like leadership David was displaying with Mephibosheth and Ziba. And as spiritual leaders, we often find ourselves having to choose between using power or love, don't we? Jesus' way or the world's way? How do I overcome my need to be seen as strong, right, in the eyes of others? The need to protect my pride and be justified and right all wrongs done to me. Will I manage with a fist or with an open hand? How will I react when I'm intentionally misled? Taken advantage of. Let down by a subordinate. Someone I'm writing the check out for them. I'm paying them, I'm, you know. And they do this? By someone I trusted. By someone that I have power over. Will I look out for my own interests or the interests of the other? Will I exercise my rightful authority or choose to have a memory lapse? Will I allow the flaws, the selfishness, the the insincerity, the flightiness, overzealousness, to prevent me from being generous and to look towards their best interests? I have to fight at this thing. This is not me, by the way. I know how to use the sword very well. I have to fight with this. Just like my broken heart. I have to continually give it away to God. This is another one of those things I have to continually do. I'm going to put down the sword and just go like this. And I'm not saying being stupid. I'm not saying God doesn't even treat us. In love, He does not just say, oh, it doesn't matter. Just go ahead and keep doing it. He does take measures. So I'm not saying, don't hear me say that. Somebody does damage to your church or doing damage, you don't just say, oh, that's not love. But will I put down the sword? Like this. I don't know about you guys, but this is like the hardest thing for me. Will I continue to allow my life and leadership to be shaped and influenced by the covenant love between me and Jesus? Like David and Jonathan. The covenant. This cup is the new covenant. A new covenant of blood. In my blood, which is poured out for you. Different deal. Different deal. I must treat others the way Jesus treated me. Not as my sins deserve, but as His covenant love demands. I must lead the way Jesus led me, according to my best interest, not His. I'm still learning. I don't know how much progress I'm making. I just am so stinking aware of it. I have to let the cross shape my life and my leadership. Paul wrote in 2 Corinthians 5, 14, 15, he said, Christ's love controls us. Since we believe that Christ died for all, we also believe that we have all died in our old life. He died for everyone so that those who received His new life will no longer live for themselves. Instead, they will live for Christ, who died and was raised for them. In the face of disappointment and heartache and stress and disorder and failure and injury that comes with the territory, that comes with spiritual leadership, we have to find, and I think it's only by God's grace and being willing, we have to find an ability to lead with cross-shaped love over and over and over. situation creates another place of, oh my God, how am I going to do this? But we do it. That's because every time we take the risk to love, this is why it's worth it. Because every time we take, as leaders, the risk to love, the gospel is proclaimed in that loving. And the kingdom of God gains credibility in that situation and in the lives involved. When you're hurting, is it easier to lead out of love? Power. What do you do? And I think as we're gonna share the Lord's Supper together, you know, this is the question that I want to pose. Well, this is, I don't know, it's a question, or, you know, this is where we're at. Lord, you know, let your love shape my leadership. Let the cross shape my life. You know, always. Can we just stand for a moment? I don't quite know what to, I thought I had a plan, but. Ray, you can come on up and help. I know. I just had, you know, I know by just knowing you as in the same business that I'm in, I know every one of you has a story of betrayal, of disappointment, of being hurt. I know every one of you have, you know, can tell compelling stories of why, you know, you were wrong and have every right, you know, to make those people, person, group, whatever, pay. And do what I used to do. You're dead to me. You have every right. And some of it's going on right now. Right now, you are sitting in the middle of a situation like that for some of you. What does cross... I can't tell you what to do. I can't tell you how, you know, oh, you should do this, oh, you know, step A, B, you know. All I can say is, what does cross-shaped love, what does cross-shaped leadership look like in your situation? Not in his situation, not in my situation, in your situation, what does it look like? And that's what you sit before the Lord about and ask. And if you, and I think that there are some of you that have been wounded and carry, this has been, happened to you maybe a while ago. There's been some distance, some time has gone by, but that wound is still there. There's still poison in your system. And it hasn't gone away. I think this could be the beginning of some healing for you right now, today, as we take the Lord's Supper together. We remember the price that was paid for us. You can kind of go through worship. This, obviously, you know, the affirmation. We're going to transition into worship.